Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You're listening to Class Dismissed, Episode 1, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. In today's episode, we're going to tell you what city is setting aside millions of dollars just so teachers can have a place to live. We'll also talk about a website that's helping some teachers make some cash on the side. Plus, we have to address the fidget spinner's tool or toy. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that covers some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, each week, we'll bring you a big idea that you can apply in your community. This week, we have special guest Luke Daniel. Luke was named Teacher of the Year for his state, so what separated him from the pack? Hey, everyone, Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined with teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt, an education data expert, Russ Davis of schoolstatus.com. Russ, how's it going over there?
It's going really good, Nick. How are you?
Doing excellent. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
You know, Lissa, I think we're coming up on the end of the school year here. We're moving into the summertime. Is that a good thing or a bad thing for someone like you who's a teacher?
A little bit of both. I mean, it's certainly sad to see kids that you've taught for so long leave your campus. I'm kind of the last stop at my school, so they go on to middle school from here. But then again, summer's coming, so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. You know, I mean, teachers, you know, you get this little break, and you got to look forward to it. I know you miss the kids. Have you ever been really attached to a particular class? Has that ever happened where...
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely... I mean, even friends of mine that teach say, wow, like this year was such a great group. You know, different groups gel together better than others, and it kind of makes the world go around. So, yeah.
Right. Russ, you know, new podcast here, so we need to do some introductions. You, I refer to you as a education data expert. Well, you created actually a company that involves software that helps out school districts. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Well, I don't know if there are any true data, quote, experts in education, but essentially School Status is we help people take the data that's running around in their school district and make smart instructional decisions. And one of the latest things we've been doing is actually taking that data and helping teachers and parents have like real conversations about what's going on in the classroom, conversations that matter, conversations about students. So our tagline is we focus on data management so educators can focus on data analysis.
So you basically take together all this data that a school district can't even process and you make it easy for them to understand, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Like there's a lot of data elements that are running around. And honestly, by the time it distills its way down from kind of the rigid school apparatus down to the teacher level, it's not really useful anymore. And so what we do is that we try to take the data directly and do all our magic and get it down to the teacher as quickly as possible. So the test that they took yesterday, for instance, would show up in our system the next day.
Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
and
pretty fast.
What's kind of the busy time for you? I mean, Lissa's about to have a break. And what about you guys? Are y'all busy in the summer?
Yeah, we are. And Lissa, I've never seen a single teacher the next day kind of beating on the doors to let me back in whenever summer starts. So I can totally get that. Yeah, our busy time is really around what schools are, you know. So, you know, whenever schools right now, schools have just let out. But the budget year for 48 states rolls over July 1. And schools pretty much purchase software when they can, which is when they have money, which is usually at the beginning of the year. And so we have a lot of schools that purchase our software that start out in July, and we also have a ton of renewals. And so you can imagine we offer free unlimited on-site training. Our trainers this year, or this time of year rather, are going to be, you know, running around like crazy during the months of July and August and September whenever school starts. It's pretty nuts.
So our goal here, guys, is to develop a podcast where we're going to be able to talk to educators all across the country. We're going to try to turn one out once a week, and hopefully folks like it. One thing we're going to do each week is focus on some of the hot topics and stories that are kind of going on around the country. So we're going to kick that off right now. We're going to call that segment our Teacher's Lounge because that's where teachers get all the scoop. Do teachers still do that? I don't know. We'll talk to Lissa in just a second about whether the lounge is even a thing anymore. All right, Lissa, what do you know? Is the lounge a thing? And tell us what the scoop is in there.
Well, I don't have a teacher's lounge because we're not allowed to or even allotted time to just visit with each other. But I do know some scoop. San Francisco, there's a little mayor there, Ed Lee, that is pushing forward for a $44 million project for teacher housing. Basically, if you work for the city as a teacher or an educator or staff member in some way, he wants to help you pay the bills by providing housing. You know, basically 130, 150 units is what he wants to build. He's got a great idea. He has a building that the school district owns that's just kind of housing old equipment and things right now that he'd like to flatten it out, build this new complex for teachers and try to help them pay the bills. I think it kind of sparked from the Chronicle doing a story on Etoria Cheeks, who's a math teacher in San Francisco that has a master's degree. So meaning she's paid more than just somebody with a regular degree, and she couldn't pay her bills. She was evicted in December.
Homeless.
She's been living in shelters and little hostels here and there, and basically, you know, found a retired teacher that allowed her to rent a room. This is kind of something that's happening a lot, especially in San Francisco, where the cost of living is so high. To just rent a one-bedroom apartment in San Fran, it's $3,300 a month.
You know, on the public education side, we talk a lot about homeless students. There's a federal act called the McKinney-Vento Act that talks about, you know, whenever a homeless student presents himself to your school district, you're supposed to immediately go put him into a desk and start teaching him. You don't really ask a lot of questions and things like that. But I guess we've never really had to address the issue of educator homelessness, which is interesting. I know, you know, running a tech company, you know, I visit San Francisco quite a bit. In fact, I'm going out there next week. And if you talk to the people that live there, there's kind of this, you know, middle class that with all the tech jobs that are, you know, with Google and Facebook, and I think, you know, Uber has an office out there. Pretty much everybody does. All the software that you use on a day-to-day basis from big-name companies. And these guys make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so naturally, if you're, you know, if you're the landlord for a building, your tendency is to, whenever people can pay more, you ask more. And I think what's happening is a lot of these folks are getting kind of squeezed out. And so this middle class of folks that typically had, you know, at least a sustainable style of living, teachers, firemen, police officers, things like that, they're getting squeezed out of the local community.
Yeah, Russ, you know, it really is kind of a sad day when, you know, it's great. San Francisco, they're going to help with the housing, but it just says they're not paying teachers enough. And I guess they've done the math and they've determined that, well, maybe we can increase salaries, but we can build housing for a little cheaper but still solve the problem.
Yeah, I don't know if it really, quote, solves the problem, but I think it's a stab at it. I think they're doing something, which is great. You know, if I was a teacher, not only is it largely a thankless job in which you make, you know, below what the folks around you are making in most cases in most states, but now I have to, you know, add on a, you know, a 50-minute BART commute to make it to my school. So it just, to me, it just adds that much more of a reason why folks, you know, may not want to go into teaching. Obviously, no one goes into it, you know, for the great perks and benefits, and every weekend you get to go to your summer house and wherever, you know, nobody does that. But I think it's just become a place where I don't think the what teachers are paid is really keeping up with what teachers should be paid, you know, and that you should be able to make a living and you should be able to, you know, have a just a middle income quality of life. And I don't know in these kind of high net worth areas like San Francisco if that's really occurring anymore.
Well, also, I think teachers are anchors in the community. You know, I mean, I can't tell you how many Little League baseball games and dance recitals and things I've attended because my students want me there and I want them to see me there. If I live an hour away and, you know, having to struggle to even just get to my regular job, I mean, how genius is this project to put teachers right back there in the community among the families that they help raise?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I got busted out in the grocery store. I grew up in a small town, and so there were only a couple of grocery stores in town. That's how small the town was. And inevitably, if I did something in school, not only did my mom work for our school district, but I would inevitably see that teacher in the grocery store, and she would tell my parents what I'd done that day. So, you know, I think that's, you know, if I was a student, obviously I wouldn't want to live in clothes, but I think that that was definitely valuable for my parents to be able to that very day take action and remediate, for lack of a better word, what was happening at school.
And, you know, and we're talking about teachers who are struggling and trying to find a way to make ends meet. And that actually kind of transitions pretty well into a story, Russ, that I know you've been following.
Yeah, absolutely, Nick. I think you can imagine in our line of work, we work exclusively. Obviously, we work with, you know, we work with teachers and principals and superintendents. But if you look at our user count, we have about 50,000 people using our software. And overwhelmingly, those folks are teachers. And so we come in contact with teachers an awful lot. And I come from a long lineage of teachers. Both of my parents were teachers. Both of my sisters teach. I'm the youngest. I don't teach. Recently, I stumbled across a site called TeachersPayTeachers.com. Have you guys heard of this?
I love that website.
So
yeah, I use it all the time.
Well, it's fantastic. So basically the gist is, if you've never heard of it, is that a teacher can go on, you know, obviously there's a lot of planning. There's, you know, people think teaching is just something you get up and do, but there's an art and a science to it. And so a lot of teachers spend a lot of time planning lessons, innovative things that make sense, manipulatives, PowerPoints, handouts, slides, things like that. And instead of letting those things just be used by one teacher, there's this website, TeachersPayTeachers.com, and it enables you basically to sell that content. So it's kind of like, you can imagine Etsy is creating kind of craft goods. This is what teachers are doing with their presentations and lessons. They're enabling other teachers to go out there and purchase them. And it's not just teachers directly buying from teachers, which is the name would indicate. It's schools are actually allotting funds for this, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
So that, you know, everybody's not, you know, if everybody's teaching, you know, polynomials, then it's really not necessary for everyone to reinvent the wheel in order to do so. So I thought that was a really great idea for teachers to leverage that. Now, I'm sure that there aren't any school districts that would try to assert, you know, to me, owning a software company, the first thing that comes to mind is some sort of intellectual property issue, right? So you develop this using our materials and our computer and our time. Does this really belong to you? I doubt there are any school districts who think like the owner of the software company does, but that would be my first concern, you know, is are there any intellectual property issues? Who owns the lesson that's being created on school time?
What's been your experience, Lissa?
Well, I mean, to talk about that, Wes, I have taught pre-algebra and algebra, among a lot of other topics, but I use teacher pay teachers most for math. And there are teachers out there that put a lot of effort and time into making really, really great lessons and, you know, interactive smart board, you know, activities and such, and then the resources to go with them. And then they, you know, when you click and purchase, you have to say that you're not sharing it with other colleagues in your school. Like, you know, one teacher, you get one use, basically. And I certainly honor that, because I know that a teacher just like me sat somewhere else in the nation and made that and put a lot of time into it and saved me a lot of time by doing it. You know, so there, I mean, as far as who owns it, I believe it's the teacher who made it.
So I'm really curious about this. How many times have you purchased lessons? Just rough estimate, you think?
Well, you know, every teacher, every good teacher has files, and they guard them with their life. And so, you know, when you first teach, you know, like he said, you know, monomials or something, you know, you're going to try to find everything you can to get that across, because that's such a foreign topic. You know, even just the name or polynomials, you know, people are immediately like, what? So, you know, you immediately go out there and try to find everything you can. So, you know, to answer your question, Nick, as soon as I have a new topic that comes up, I mean, a good teacher wouldn't just use the book. I mean, obviously we use as much as we can, but when I pay for that one time use, which, just so y'all know, would be maybe $3 for a, you know, maybe a 5-part lesson on polynomials, then I keep that. I keep the hard copy, and then the next year I can make the same copies for myself. Should another teacher want to borrow it, you know, then, you know, that's when you have to be a good person and say, oh, I got it off that website. I don't know where it is. You got to go get it. You know, I mean, But of course, files get passed on from teacher to teacher sometimes when you move out of a classroom, and so it could still be there.
Yeah, what I was interested, whenever I was looking at it, I was really interested about how the actual website, again, owning a software company, how the actual website made money. And apparently, it's like an eBay where there's like a commission system. So whenever you buy something, they nibble off a little bit of each transaction. And that's how the website makes money. I think it's great. I think anything that you can take the effort of one and multiply it to try to save time for other people, I think it's really just a fantastic idea.
You know, if somebody knows of a better website than maybe Teachers Pay Teachers, I don't know if there's competition out there or not, let us know about it, and we'd love to kind of spread the word. Just email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. Again, that's info@classdismissedpodcast.com. Next up is a story that I think, you know, we'll probably laugh at about a year from now, but it's the fidget spinners. They're kind of taking over classrooms and schools all around the country, so I feel like we're not doing our job if we don't talk about it a little bit. But there's that debate, and I think it's a pretty easy debate to have. Is this a tool for ADHD, or is it just a toy? What are your thoughts, Lisa?
Well, let's see. Let's see, Nick. If somebody was sitting in your class, let's say 24 children, and 10 of them start spinning something that has lights that are flashing and blinking, some of them make noises, is that a toy? Or is it a tool? Is it helping them focus?
So they have lights now? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. They flash.
I am headed over to Amazon.
Yeah,
right now,
they flash. And I mean, now I'll be honest. I've purchased one for my son. I held out as long as I could. My oldest son went and purchased his own and came home and spun it in my face. So it's not like I'm just getting it at school. I'm getting it at home. But my younger son is saying, hey, I want one of those. So we finally looked and looked on Amazon. It is fun to shop for them. It is certainly, I mean, I walked down the hall last week and there was a boy in his cubby in the hallway, like basically like a locker. And as I pass by, he slams the door shut. And I'm like, what's going on in there? What you got? Oh, yeah, it was like a black market fidget spinner sale going on. He had kids lined up. So, you know, one piece of his inventory was missing, and he said someone had stolen from him. I mean, it's a mess.
Yeah. Russ, any thoughts on him?
Well, I have a 20-month-old, so I'm not quite into the whole, you know, trends, things that are going on. The only way I find out about it is, you know, our staff that do have children of that age. And it's always amazing to me. Like, I always feel like I'm the last person to find out about anything because I had no idea this was going on until literally last week. Oh. And it just seems like one day I knew nothing about it, and the next day I see them everywhere. It's like the Pokemon Go, right? It's like I noticed everybody kind of walking around like zombies. And the next day I was like, what the heck is going on? And then everybody was doing it. And it's kind of the same thing with these fidget spinners. So do you guys want to take a bet on how much life they have left in them? Is this something that lasts for another month or two? Or
they will not return for the fall. I can't see it. If they do, they'll be strict. You know, you have to have a doctor's excuse to say that you're allowed to have this for educational purposes. I mean, so many children have them that I know don't have a reason to have them. So it does kind of stink that they've gotten so wild and crazy. And so there might be a child that could have spun it silently under the table that maybe won't. But I bet you what they'll do is, as they do with everything in the schools, you know, they'll kind of clamp down on it. They'll, you know, it's always, you know, putting out a fire. They'll probably, you know, just have some guidelines on school supply lists. I'm sure it'll say there will probably be school supply lists across the nation that say no fidget spinners.
Without dating ourselves, let's try to think of some things that have kind of been those fad toys maybe of our time or just over the past couple decades. The one that comes to mind for me is Garbage Pail Kids. And that's
trading,
do you remember those?
Cards. The trading cards, yeah.
Did you know those, Russ?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I know what they are. I don't think we traded them whenever I was in school. So I think you're actually dating yourself a little bit there.
That's the 80s. Yeah.
But we were definitely with slap bracelets and a lot of kids whenever I was in junior high or middle school, they were really into Pogs. So they would trade Pogs and they would have these booklets of them or magic cards.
What is a Pog?
They were like metal, right?
Yeah, well, they were some were metal, some were cardboard, but they were like, you know, it's like an episode of Seinfeld, right? You're trying to explain it, and it always sounds kind of stupid, you know, whenever you're trying to explain it to people. But they were basically, they had like little pictures on them, and people would trade them, and like anything else, some were rare, and some were very common, and so you would trade them, and you know, I never was, I guess, cool or not cool. I'm not sure which side of the – I'll say cool because I was not on – I was on this side. So I was never one of the uncool kids that had them. But I don't know. It wasn't something I was really very familiar with. I give it about 3 more weeks and we'll, you know, we'll wonder what happened to those fidget spinners.
Yeah. Someone's listening to this podcast in the future.
That's right.
Because this is such a great show. And they're like, I'm going back to episode one. And they're laughing because they're like, oh, yeah, fidget spinners.
I actually told my class the other day, I said, you guys, this is something that you need to keep even after it's popular. You need to keep it in a Tupperware container or something under your bed, because when you are in college one day and have to dress like this decade that you're in, if you walked around with a fidget spinner, fidget spinner. If you're walking around with one of those, you nailed it.
This is true. Speaking of Tupperware, also something that used to be really big and there were parties about, but not anymore.
Not so much.
Somebody that still sells Tupperware.
Like the real stuff.
Yeah. She has a catalog you can order.
All right. So now we're going to transition to our Bright Idea segment. Our first guest here for episode one is Luke Daniel. Luke Daniel was actually named Teacher of the Year for the state of Mississippi. Luke, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me in today.
Excellent. We're glad you could join us. We're really excited kind of to pick into your brain a little bit and figure out what it takes to be Teacher of the Year. So when you got that award, was it a surprise to you, or were you like, had you been working at it? How's that work?
Absolutely. It came as a surprise. Even when I was announced as my Teacher of the Year just for my school, it felt like a tremendous honor and surprise. And I think that kind of started with my PLC members, my other sixth grade math teachers all ganged up and decided to nominate me. And somehow that gained traction and I was selected it as my school's Teacher of the Year. And every step of the way, I just convinced myself that I wasn't going to get it for the next step. So I had made a habit of not writing any kind of speeches. And then somehow it just kept on happening. So it certainly has come as a surprise. And even having, I guess, what, almost 2 months ago now, I got word that I'd received it for the state of Mississippi. It still doesn't quite feel like real life.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
Well, and just to cut the we try to keep the jargon to a minimum. PLC is Professional Learning Community, right?
Right.
So those
right.
are your fellow teachers that work with you in the same grade area or subject.
Exactly.
Trying to do that.
Thanks, Russ, because I was afraid to ask.
Yeah. No. I mean, trust me. In education, it's like one of the guys I know says alphabet soup. Like if you can come up
absolutely.
With a 3 or 4 letter combination, it exists somewhere in education. You know, I've talked to some of your peers and, you know, they describe you as the kind of guy that comes in early and stays late, you know, tutors folks without having to be prompted to, that sort of thing. But what do you think the one thing is, or the couple of things are, that made the biggest difference in the children that you teach and therefore kind of put you up for this award?
That is hard to say.
It's hard to talk about yourself, right?
Exactly. If you want to know my flaws, we can be here all day
long. Well, I could talk to your wife if I wanted to know that. I mean, I don't.
Gosh, I would say probably the most important thing to being successful in education really has very little to do with pushing content at students, and it has everything to do with building relationships with students. And I would hope that my peers would see the level of effort that I put into getting to know students and helping them to see that I genuinely care about them. You know, talking with them at lunch and getting to know them more than just as students, but as people. And I've only taught in sixth grade for a couple of years now. I moved down from teaching high school, and one of the perks of that is that we get to go to recess every day, and just I get out there and play with them at recess, and we play really hard. It's really fun being a foot and a half taller than all of them and being able to, you know, dunk on them on the basketball court and that sort of thing.
But Doyle rules.
Oh, absolutely. But it is. I would say that separates me from a lot of people, just because. I mean, I genuinely love coming in, not just for the content, but for the kids, and being just helpful enough to get students to get their foot in the door with concepts and problems, but not so helpful that I'm doing the work for them. So that's a constant juggling act of not just standing back and saying, y'all go figure out everything on your own, but also not spoon feeding them and and just doing the work for them.
You know, something from your Teacher of the Year presentation that I guess touched me was that you were, I hope you don't mind me sharing with the world, you know, just outside of the room, is that you were pretty emotional whenever you're giving your speech, you know. And I think that's pretty telling about, you know, your dedication to your students and, you know, getting, you know, people say don't get emotionally attached, but in that role, I can't imagine how you don't.
When I entered the classroom, so much of what I had heard from just my coworkers and, you know, even some professors was how important it was to be somewhat detached from the students and just know them all sort of like a business type level. You know, you're making an exchange of services, but I just think that's complete garbage. You know, if the more students, the more I've been able to connect with students, the more that I've been able to get them to work hard for me. And I believe that it's something that I struggled with in my first couple of years of teaching that I've embraced since.
I agree. I think a lot of new teachers are given a lot of misinformation from maybe older teachers that have been doing it a long time. You know, I think what sounds like what makes you so amazing is that you are a student of your students, which is great. You know, you want to lock in with them. And you teach math, is that correct?
I do, sixth grade math.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's a tough one. I've taught math. Right. I've taught pre-algebra, algebra, fourth, fifth, sixth. So it is tough to kind of connect with students and then say, okay, but now math. So
right,
a lot of
exactly.
kids have a hard time making a connection with math. Tell us a little bit more about how you bridge that.
Well, that is one of the reasons that I did want to move down from teaching high school to sixth grade is that, you know, I stressed to the high school students so much of, you know, this is important. You're going to use this in life. Well, when are we going to use this in life? Well, when you're shooting a basketball that follows
the
path of a parabola, and right? And you're going to use the quadratic formula to figure out exactly when it's going to reach its vertex. And, you know, you're going to use this every day. I did want to move down to a level where the content really was applicable to their lives, and things that I've enjoyed so much is teaching. I think it's a newer development that are called three act tasks, where students are presented with some type of scenario, and it really is an authentic scenario, whether it's a video or a picture or something to that effect. And from that video, it sort of begs a question that the students, after having watched the video, develop on their own. You know, it kind of lends itself to certain questions that need to be asked. And through that, students are able to see when a mathematical skill or concept would be applied without saying, here is all of the information that you need to solve this particular problem. Now just plug it into a formula.
How do you work to get, you know, obviously you were talking about students in your classroom and getting them engaged and, you know, being informed about what's going on, but how do you get parents engaged at home so that, you know, that experience is just cohesive from school to home and back and forth? We do a lot of research into this right now, and I'm personally interested with such a highly credentialed teacher, you know, how do you get those parents engaged and keep them engaged in that sixth grade setting?
I start making contact with parents just by phone call in the first week of school. And it's a time consuming thing, but I try in that first week of school to talk with each parent of each kid.
So, Luke, one thing that some of the listeners may not know is when you win, you actually get a trip to the White House, and you haven't done that yet, right?
I have not. No, that will be next spring. I think Mississippi announces theirs a little bit on the earlier side. So the current Mississippi Teacher of the Year just returned from Washington a few weeks ago.
And I think I saw that picture. Like, they actually got in the Oval Office, which is,
they did.
I mean,
awesome.
Put your politics aside. If you get into an Oval Office, like, that's quite the
right.
experience.
Absolutely.
So you guys are pretty excited? Yeah.
Absolutely. And my wife is a U.S. history teacher. So I'm not sure if she's allowed to go, but she's probably going to try to force her way in, even if she's not allowed to. So, so we are thrilled to be able to do that.
That's excellent. Well, again, Luke, we had talked before. We would like to do a little segment with our guest called Pop Quiz. And what we're going to do every week is we're going to do this pop quiz, but they're going to be the same questions for each guest. So as you listen to the show, you'll kind of get a feel and different perspectives on maybe some of the same questions. So all these questions are going to be education-based. Are you ready for that?
I suppose
as ready as you'll ever be, right?
Absolutely.
All right, first question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject would it be?
I'm supposed to say math, right?
No, you don't have to. That's,
I'm going to say language arts. You know, as important as I feel that my job is, if you are a great reader, then you can learn so much on your own. And one of the goals of teachers is to empower students to not need a teacher anymore. So I think being able to be a great reader and analyzer is more important than anything.
All right. What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
It's a tough question. I think, and some schools do this excellently and others push it to the back burner, but just social skills, the ability to kind of emotional intelligence, being able to have conversations and just character skills, I would say, as vague as that is.
What does every child deserve?
Every child deserves someone in their corner who will fight for their success.
Biggest challenge for today's educators?
It is hard to maintain your motivation if you don't have a big enough why for what you're doing.
Best gift to give a teacher?
I think teacher or any human, the best gift that you can give anybody is a book.
Okay.
An opportunity to learn something new.
Pen or pencil?
Pen.
What career path would you take if you couldn't be in education?
Can I be the starting point guard for the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Yes.
Does that count?
Yes,
okay.
You can, however, but the players are taller than 5'1". So it may not be as fun for you as he says.
Right.
What teacher changed your life?
I'm going to say Coach West, AP chemistry in high school.
All right. Do you like to buy a school lunch or bring your own to school?
I bring my own, and it is the most boring lunch ever. I have the same thing every single day.
Oh, no.
Turkey sandwich, couple of Little Debbies, as unhealthy as that is, an apple to cancel out the Little Debbies.
Michelle Obama is watching you.
Right.
She's very disappointed.
And a bottle of water.
There you go.
And what do you do on your planning period?
A lot of trying to find the top of my desk. I have a terrible tendency to let things get so piled up. It's really a catch-up period for me.
That's going to wrap up our first pop quiz. Luke, thank you for being such a great sport.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate you. Thanks for coming by and visiting us on the Class Dismissed podcast. And we hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right. Take care.
See you.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for our first episode of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you. If you have an idea, question, or comment for any of us on the show, remember you can email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. Again, that's info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we also need your support. So if you'd like the show, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We may even make a habit of reading your great review on our future episodes. And on behalf of Russ with schoolstatus.com and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, thank you for listening. I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.